What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Jesus and the Arts podcast. I am your host, Stephen Williams, and we are back after 2 weeks of me not recording an episode, which I deeply apologize for. The last guest that I was going to have had to cancel, something was going on with their family, but they're doing much better now. But today, we have a very special guest. She is related to me. She is my older sister. This is Megan Williams.
Hello, everyone.
And the crowd goes wild. Woo!
Woo!
Nobody's here. It's just her cats.
They're excited I'm here.
Yes,
they're excited you're here.
Yay!
They love Uncle Steven.
Yes. What does Dad call them? Grandkitties?
Grandcats.
Grandcats?
But they're not your grandcats. They would be your niece and nephew.
There you go.
Your niece cat and nef cat.
Yeah, nef cat. That's awesome. Yeah, so this is my older sister, Megan. She is one of five.
I'm the oldest.
She's the oldest.
Of the Williams clan.
Yeah, it is a clan. We're like a gang.
No, clan and gang are not the same thing. We are not a gang.
Oh, man. So, just going to ask some basic questions before we get into the big juicy stuff. You got a new job recently.
Care to
explain what the new job is?
Sure. I am working at the school that I attended for my entire education, Miami Valley Christian Academy in Newtown, Ohio. I think all of your guests so far have been current students there.
Yes.
I graduated from there in 2018 and just recently, I've been a sub there for a couple of school years. And then recently the principal, one of my good friends, called me out of the blue and offered me a new position that they were trying out at the school, a school aide for kindergarten and first grade teachers. There are 5 kindergarten classes and 5 first grade classes.
That's crazy.
I know. The school has grown a lot since I was there and even since you graduated last year.
Yeah. Okay, so question.
Yes.
When you were in school, how many kindergarten classes were there? Like when you graduated from high school?
Oh, when I graduated from high school, Susanna would have been 8. So mm-hmm. She would have been in probably 3rd grade.
Yeah, I think so.
Kindergartens? I don't know that I knew anybody who was in kindergarten when I graduated, so I can't know the numbers for sure, but I doubt it was more than 2 or 3 classes.
Yeah, I know I was in 4th grade when they like said that they were going to have 2 kindergarten classes, I believe. Because okay. When I was in 3rd grade, because my grade was the largest grade in elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to make 2 second grades and 2 third grades for us.
Which there were 2 of every class when I was there as well.
Okay.
But we just didn't start switching back and forth until 3rd grade.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had like 2 separate homerooms.
Okay.
But yeah, now there are 5 homerooms for kindergarten and first grade, and then 4 of every other grade in the elementary school.
That's absolutely 5 is crazy.
I know. So they combine 4th and 5th grade for recess and for lunch. There are 104 4th graders, just 4th graders.
That's insane.
Not including the 5th graders that are there, too. It's like 150 kids at recess.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, there are a lot of children.
So are you, like, the only, like, teacher's aide, I guess?
I'm not. There are 5 of us total, 1 for each kindergarten class.
Okay.
One of them is the nature teacher. She teaches the nature special, which is new this year.
Nice.
And that's for kindergarten, first, and 2nd grade. So just gets them more outdoors. And then she does fun crafts with them on days where they have to stay inside. So she helps with kindergarten in the morning and then teaches her specials class in the afternoon. So there are 5 aides total, but only 4 of us who do both kindergarten and first grade.
Okay.
So she's primarily a specials teacher, but just helps out in the morning. So I guess it's a full-time position for her.
Okay. Do you like it?
I do. I really like it a lot.
Nice.
I love being around kids, and I've been around them my whole life since I have 4 younger siblings and lots of little cousins.
Yep.
So I've been babysitting for a long time, and I nannied for a little bit at the end of last year and beginning of this year. And I've been volunteering in church nursery and all that jazz for a long time. So I love being around kids, and kindergartners are just super cute. They're also
Yes.
very small. Like it's hard to
Dude.
believe that either you or I, or any adult for that matter, was ever as tiny as these kindergartners are. They're just so tiny.
They are. Which is crazy 'cause like I was tiny in elementary. But like when I look at the oh my gosh. She's playing with my bookmark.
Yes, Clover likes ribbons and dangly things.
When I was in the lower school the other day helping with Miss Stenger, there was just all the kids were just so tiny.
I know.
I was like, there's no way I was this tiny.
I know. I think that every time I'm there, I'm like, surely I wasn't as short as these tiny little
Yeah, I
ones are,
know.
but I probably was.
Yeah. But that's cool. I'm glad that you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's super great to be in a Christian work environment. And I mean, to have dedicated time for prayer and chapel every week is super fun.
Yeah.
The woman who leads chapels is just really great with the kids, and she's super passionate about the Lord and about the children, and they really love her. It's fun to sing their little worship songs with them. It's really cute.
Yeah. You just went on like a conference, like Simeon Trust, correct? Is
Yeah.
that what the title was called?
The Charles Simeon Trust Workshop, something about,
Okay.
there's like a subheading about like expositional
Okay.
preaching or teaching or something like that.
Yes. Can you talk to us about what that was and if you liked it and what you took away from it when you were there?
Sure. So the Simeon Trust program, question mark, it's actually a series of classes that are taught through a university in Chicago. It's based on improving expositional preaching and teaching. Expositional just means taking the text and preaching out of the text, as opposed to taking certain passages like either out of context or just directly applying it to us now. There's what they call a pathway of preparation, and it takes you on an essential journey to make sure that we're gleaning the full, accurate meaning of biblical passages. So you start with the author's original audience and what he was saying to them then, and you talk about structure, and there are different strategies to identify the structure of the text, and then you discover the author's emphasis in that passage. And then you go on the path of theological reflection, where, in light of the gospel that we now have, how does this passage relate to the gospel, and why does that gospel connection matter for us? And then finally, you move on to application. So,
Okay.
okay, we figured out what it means for the author's original audience, and we figured out its gospel connection and why that matters for us and why it matters in general. So now, how do we apply it to our lives?
Okay.
So it was super informative. It was like a fire hose of information for 3 days.
Yeah.
Friday was the longest day. It was 8:30 to 5, and there were presentations on worksheets that we had completed ahead of time and instructions. There was a little bit of worship. And so Simeon Trust, they focus on improving expositional preaching for male preachers, just all over the world. Our home church has hosted a couple of Simeon Trust workshops, and
That's
we've had
right.
pastors from all over the world come. I helped volunteer at the welcome table a couple of years ago, and it was really cool just to hear all the accents and hear where everybody was from. And I was not allowed to sit in on that, which was a bummer. But as a woman, our home church and the Simeon Trust program believes that preaching is for men only. That doesn't mean that men and women are less than equal, or one is more valuable or less valuable in the eyes of God, but we just have very different roles. And so men are called to be preachers in front of a congregation at a church, but that doesn't mean that women can't or shouldn't know how to teach the Bible or even read the Bible. So
Correct.
the Simeon Trust workshop was just for women, and it was about women teaching other it was for women who are teaching other women or who are teaching children in
Okay.
different kinds of ministry. So there were a lot of women Bible study teachers. There were a couple youth group leaders,
Nice.
some people who work in children's ministry,
Okay.
And then some were just are also evangelizing their children and working on bringing their children up in the Lord. So I was asked to go by one of my good friends at church. She and one of my former Sunday school teachers actually have been saying that they really think I would be a good women's Bible study leader, and they want me to pray about stepping into that role and working on teaching a Bible study, which is it's very humbling to know that people think that about you. That's mm-hmm. not necessarily something that I would think about myself or have asked for or volunteered myself for.
Yeah.
So my friend asked me to consider going, and just like a no pressure, like this doesn't mean that I now have to teach a Bible study, but just getting me more equipped in case mm-hmm. the Lord leads me in that direction. And I do really want to put to use what I learned, because it's all just currently like stewing around in my head, and I haven't even really fully processed everything yet because there was so much information. But I definitely learned a lot about how to read the Bible correctly and how to discern different kinds of context, the different strategies that we can use to figure out why the context matters, and just being willing and desiring to put in the work to figure out how every single passage of the Bible can apply
yep.
to us today, and why it all points to Jesus, and why that's all the most important thing. It was super cool because our church focuses on expositional preaching, and all of our pastors do that really well.
Yeah.
And so we had to do some pre-work. We had a couple of worksheets where we were assigned passages, and we basically had to exegete them and figure out, yeah, the original context, the original meaning, how the gospel fits in. And then we had to come up with like a talk title and a teaching outline. And we had to present those to small groups there and then received feedback about those.
Okay.
So that was pretty vulnerable, because I had never been to one of these workshops before, so I had no idea what I was doing. And so I was feeling pretty confident. And then after two sessions of instruction, I was like, oh no, I did these totally wrong. So, I mean, we were very gracious to one another, and a lot of us were newbies. And so it was not a time to tear each other down, but simply a time to see, okay, so what did you manage to do on your own? And then how can we propel your work forward so that you grow in these different areas moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
So doing the worksheets, it was really cool to see or to think about how this is how our pastors prepare their sermons every
yep.
week.
They
sit down probably with a similar worksheet, or they've done enough of these that the format is just kind of ingrained in their head. And then this is how they sit down, and this is how they tackle the passage that they prepare a sermon on. So it was really cool to kind of take that peek behind the curtain and just to get a better understanding of how they prepare the sermons. And Pastor Ryan, after church today, he was asking me about the workshop, and he asked if I was judging his main point. And I told him no, I was trying to make the connections between his main point and how he arrived at that conclusion, based on all that I had just learned, because we just got back yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
And he said, like, I don't judge you if you were critiquing me. And he said that one of the things he loves most about church lay members going to these workshops is that they're listening with a different kind of ear or a different mind, and they're paying attention in a different way after they come back from that.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to hear his main point, and then to think about, like, would I have come up with that connection, or would I have made that my main point? Would we have had different emphases? Like, what would I do with this passage? So mm-hmm. it's really cool. It's a new way to interact with the Word of God, and a new way to see just how intentional he was as he inspired all the authors to write this book, that in every single passage, even a passage from Numbers or Leviticus, how that can point to Jesus Christ and why he matters and why the gospel is important.
Yeah, for sure. You said, you talked about it, like the stuff you learned there, like how you brought it back to church and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Boyce for D3, the conference there, me and some other people and I guess that's the right grammar.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
I've heard it explained. So if you're trying to say like he and I or he and me, if you took out the he and, would it make sense to say like he and me went to the store? Would it make sense to say me went to the store? No, it would be I went to the store. So it would be he and
I. He and I. Okay.
So that's how I learned to just take out the other person and the word and then see if me or I makes sense in that context if you're just talking about yourself.
Okay, cool.
This mini is also grammar lesson over.
Yeah, English class, guys.
Probably
there you go.
To be revisited because Steven's grammar is
it's not that good.
A little leaves a bit to be desired, in my opinion.
I promise I got A's in my English class, okay? I promise.
I believe you.
Anyway, one of like the workshops that they had there was like a worship workshop, and it was mostly just about like how to set up your songs. And they do it the same way we do, where it's like each song is like connected to the gospel.
Yeah.
And to like the gospel liturgy.
Yeah, the God man Christ response.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. At the workshop, one of the speakers, her name was Colleen McFadden, I'm not sure, and then Aaron Wheeler, both really great women speakers and teachers. And I think Aaron is actually part of Priscilla Talk, and she's related to somebody who does Preacher's Talk, I think, as well. So it's another one of those Nine Marks podcasts. Quick plug for Nine Marks and their great podcast.
Bible Talk.
Yeah. We actually had some people from Hunt Singer Lane Baptist, where Sam goes.
Oh, nice.
From Bible Talk.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was really cool. One of the ladies had come up with a chiasm on one of her passages, and I had done that too for a different passage. But as soon as she finished presenting, the first question out of one of the other women's mouths was, "You're from Hunt Singer?" And she goes, "Yeah." She's like, "Yeah, I can tell because of the chiasm. I just thought of Sam." Sam loves his chiasms.
Yes, he does.
So it was cool. There's, just that, like, you know, that family aspect of, even though I've never met Sam or spent one-on-one time with any of those guys, it's cool to like see their connections. But anyways, I brought that up because Colleen at one point asked, just so we were all on the same page, she was like, "So what is the gospel?" Like, everybody was really quiet, and it was really funny just because you don't want to get that wrong in a room full of other seasoned believers. So she was like, okay, let's just start calling stuff out. We were just calling things out, and then we were trying to put it together. That's like the most basic question of Christianity, but that's honestly like, I mean, I freeze up when I hear that question.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I know it in my heart, but articulating it is really hard to do on the fly.
Yeah, and even sometimes, like, unfortunately, some pastors and some churches kind of twist the gospel a little bit.
Yeah, or they just have missed parts of it.
Yeah.
Like, our speaker, Colleen, she told a story about how she grew up in church and was at church every Sunday. And so one year they were getting ready to celebrate a certain holiday, and it was Jesus's birthday, and she went, "We were getting ready to celebrate Easter." And she had like totally missed and gotten mixed up. This is when she was younger, like gotten the Christmas and Easter mixed up, just because the church that she was attending didn't clarify the gospel and wasn't preaching it right. So she was like, "I don't recommend anyone ever go to that church."
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So it's something we need to be clear on. Sorry for the aside. You were saying something about your worship class in D3.
No, yeah, I was just saying how they taught, like how they picked the songs for their chapels and stuff, and also like for the sessions, the worship sessions that we have before the pastor comes up and speaks. It was just very similar about how we do it at Faith. And so when I came back that Sunday, I was like looking at the songs, and I was like trying to find out why it fits into that category of what is it? God, man,
Christ response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How it fits into like each section.
Yeah.
But it was really cool, 'cause like they do the same thing we do. And it's also cool how both of our pastors came from there.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The church that Simeon Trust was hosted at was Third Avenue Baptist Church in Louisville. And that's actually where
Jim Hamilton's church, right? No.
No. It's where Drew and Becca French went to church while Drew was in seminary at Southern. So he and Becca started their family in Louisville, and Piper grew up a little bit
That's
at
right.
Third Ave. So we've heard a lot about Third Avenue because some missionaries that our church supports also attended there for a while. During the pandemic, they were stuck in the States and they were stuck in Louisville, and so they attended that church as well. And then one of my best friends, who's a missionary, her training for her organization was held at Third Ave. So it was really cool because she gave me like some couple names to look for and say, hey, like I know so and so, she says hi. And I didn't see any of them, but I did see Max Stiles' daughter-in-law, who my friend had stayed with for that training. And so the first night I introduced myself, like, hey, I'm best friends with this girl. And her face just lit up. And it was super cool to just see that connection and know that we had a mutual friend in common. And then actually one of the, or the woman who was kind of like the MC, quote unquote, for the whole workshop, she was affiliated with my friend's organization. And so, and she only revealed it like at the very end. So I was like, I had recognized her name, or her name had looked so familiar. And when she said that she was affiliated with that missions org, I like ran up after she was done, was like, I realize why I know your name. Like, you know, my friend. And so it was super cool to just, yeah, realize that connection and get to give her a bit of an update on my friend in the mission field and know that there are a lot of women at this study or at this workshop who knew my friend really well. And it was really great to feel that sense of kinship and that familial bond with them.
Yeah,
It was really awesome.
for sure. That's awesome. Okay, cool. So moving on from that, we're gonna do a little game
Oh, I like
before
games.
we get into
Shall we play a game?
the main course. I know that it's from Winter Soldier.
Yes, but
But it's also from
it's
another
from
movie.
Saw,
Oh,
the horror franchise Saw,
okay.
I think.
So we're
Oh gosh, this is about movies. I think it's from Saw. I don't know for sure.
the game is agree, disagree, and I'm gonna just say a sentence about a film, and at the same time we have to say whether we agree or disagree, and then we'll take turns on saying why we
Okay.
stand by that answer.
Sounds good.
So the first question, I'm just coming up with this off the top of my head. But we'll start with easy. We'll do the Harry Potter books are better than the movies. 3, 2, 1, agree.
Agree, 100%.
Okay, go first. Why?
I'm actually rereading the series right now.
Me
I
too.
haven't reread it in probably 7 years at least. It's been a really long time since I've read the books. starting this new job, I haven't had the energy to read, so I wanted to read something I'm familiar with to kind of get me back into the love of reading. So I picked Harry Potter since it had been so long, and I've just been devouring them. They're incredibly well written. The imagery is beautiful, and I haven't rewatched the movies alongside of it because I wanted to kind of let the books stand on their own, but I do plan on rewatching the films at some point in the nearish future. But the books are just so full of character development and such unique individual characters. I just forgot how much Peeves brings to the
Oh,
series.
dude.
And while I understand why he wasn't included in the movie franchise, because he's not a main character, he is a main side character, and it's so much fun to see him throughout each book. And I just also, when I first read the series, like the first few times, my favorite book was Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And
I'm
I
on that one right now.
am not sure why that was my favorite, because my least favorite character was introduced in that book, and my favorite character didn't make it out of the book.
Oh,
So
dang.
I don't want to give any spoilers.
Yeah.
if you haven't read Harry Potter, go do that. So I don't know why that one was my favorite, but I'm rereading and trying to see if that remains my favorite book, or if as I read it as an adult, I have a new favorite book. I'm on Deathly Hallows right now. I'm almost done with the series.
Dang.
But I'm really enjoying Deathly Hallows this read through. Specifically, the character arc that the Golden Trio has with Creature, the Black's house elf, is just like really hitting me in a different way this time around. And I'm really, yeah, I really enjoyed that part of it. And I am really not eager to finish the series because it'll be, you know, kind of bittersweet once it's done. But I've just had a really good time reading through the books again.
Yeah, I think I agree because, I mean, you said a lot of the stuff that I agree with, but there is just like a lot more. She just puts so much more detail into each sentence and like each chapter that just the movies can't capture on camera. Yeah. Like, my biggest thing, like, reading the books, I'm like, wow, Draco's in a lot more of the books than the movies, I feel like.
Hmm. That's fair.
Yeah.
The movies really tamed down a lot of characters.
Like Ginny.
Well, okay, yeah, that was...
They made her stupid.
Quiet part out loud. Not stupid, they just really tamed down her personality. I'm not entirely sure why they did that. I would love to kind of talk with Chris Columbus and be like, so why did you make those choices? How much was J.K. Rowling involved in making these choices with you? I have Tom Felton's autobiography about his experience growing up as like a Harry Potter child star. I haven't read it. But I mean, Tom Felton himself is a sweetheart. And so playing kind of a character was probably difficult for him.
Yeah.
I know that the cast has a lot of really fond memories together and that they have nothing but love for one another. And while some of them now disagree with Rowling and a lot of her beliefs, I hope they don't regret the way that they truly did like shape a generation.
Oh, for sure.
As the characters, Harry, Ron, Hermione, Luna, Neville, all of them. And it's so much fun to see the different actors in other things now that they're grown up and remember like, oh, they were so little.
Yeah. Like Daniel Radcliffe being on Broadway.
Daniel Radcliffe got so typecast and so wealthy from those movies that he has just been doing whatever he wants in the last few years. And he's been doing some weird stuff. And I don't necessarily agree with all the films he's been in, but I can't begrudge him for just having fun with his life and for doing something that he's passionate about, even if I disagree.
Yeah. Okay. Next question or phrase.
Okay.
Out of the three Christopher Nolan Batman movies with Christian Bale, Dark Knight Rises is the worst one. And I'm not saying worst, saying like it's absolutely
like
terrible.
It's a horrible movie.
It's just with the first and the second three. Yeah, it's the worst of three. Three, two, one, disagree.
I don't know.
That's not the correct answer.
I know. Everybody hates on Dark Knight Rises because it came after The Dark Knight, which was a very intense movie. And it did a lot of things really well.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that Dark Knight Rises is as bad as a lot of people think it is. I actually really enjoy it.
I do too. I love it.
Yeah.
I like it better than the first.
Really?
Yeah.
They all have things that make them incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the first one, I can't say which one is the worst. I don't like ranking trilogies like that or like movie series because they can stand alone, but they're supposed to stand together. So they're not supposed to be like split up.
For sure. I just love how smart they made Bane. Like how he trapped all of the police officers underground.
Yeah.
Like that's so smart.
Yeah.
That's 100 IQ.
I'm not going to sit here and say that they stuck to the comics on the third movie because they definitely did not.
No.
And I think that's why a lot of people hate on it is because they changed Bane's character so much from the comics. They made him intelligent and not just muscle.
A big idiot.
Yeah, they made him smart. But I'm also not going to sit here and say that it's a bad movie. So I like comics and I enjoy reading them. I haven't read all of them. I haven't read a ton. So I wouldn't say I'm a good authority on any kind of comic books. So I guess because of that, I give comic book movies a little bit more leeway than I do book adaptations. Because I've typically read the books that are being adapted into films.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I had read the comics before seeing the any kind of superhero movie, I would have stronger feelings on it. But as it is, I try to keep comic book movies separate from their source material and just judge them based on camera work and writing quality as opposed to the source material like I do for book adaptations.
Yeah, that's fair. Next one. Thor Ragnarok is the most comedic Marvel movie in the MCU. 3, 2, 1, disagree.
Agree.
Oh, okay.
Our first difference.
You first, go ahead.
No, you go first.
Okay, fine. I have been rewatching the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Oh, that's fair.
And I think they are the most just comedic. Mm-hmm. It's just so funny. I don't like him because of the music. The music's great, like the songs that James Gunn put in those movies. I just like it how those four, well, five, are the most random people on the entire galaxy,
mm-hmm.
and yet they somehow work, and just their chemistry in, not in the movies, but also the comics, is just really good, and the actors that he picked for them just made the movie.
Oh, the casting was great.
So much more funny and just
for sure.
Humorous. Yeah, and the second one, I posted something on Instagram. I put Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 might be the second best Marvel movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
After Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yes, good. Okay. Glad we don't have to disagree on that.
Yeah.
About Winter Soldier, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have actually been thinking about rewatching Guardians as well. I haven't seen it in a while, and I do remember it being hilarious. I think I would consider Ragnarok to be the funniest, simply because it really balanced tones well, and it really made its villain have senses of humor.
Yeah.
Like, Hela had some pretty good lines. And it was a really dark premise, you know, the execution or the annihilation of Asgard as a planet. And yet it subverted your expectations with the bits of humor. So I think, and also it was very well, like the color grading was really great. Mm-hmm. And then again, the cast worked together really well. And Mark Ruffalo as Hulk, human Bruce Banner. He's not necessarily like a comedic actor per se, but him just being constantly confused was hysterical.
Yes.
And then seeing Thor and Loki in a different dynamic was really funny, and because they were able to interact as both adult characters instead of, you know, in the first movie they were both really young, and then in the second movie they were just on different paths, and in this one they had a common goal and they were able to work well together and then banter off each other, which was really entertaining to watch. I would also suggest that the Ant-Man movies are also funny.
Those
I haven't seen Quantumania. I've heard that I don't really need to.
No, you don't.
but the first and second one are pretty hilarious. Probably the first one is probably funnier. The second one was funny, but it's hard to laugh at it since it came out right after Infinity War.
Yeah.
Because everyone was depressed. And so it was like, why are they making us laugh? We're all currently really sad.
For sure. Okay, we'll do two more.
Okay.
So question or phrase four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about how I should phrase this. We'll just do it easy and simple. Infinity War is way better than Endgame. 3, 2, 1. Agree.
Agree? Question mark. I really dislike Endgame.
Yeah.
I don't remember Infinity War super well. Again, depressing. So I think I watched it in theaters and maybe once after that, and I haven't watched it since. I didn't like Endgame at all. So
that's fair.
I think Infinity War is automatically above Endgame in my book, but I don't remember it well enough to confidently say it was a better movie.
Yeah. I'm rewatching it right now. Because I'm rewatching every film the Guardians have been in.
Okay.
So that means eventually I have to watch the holiday special.
Which was awesome.
That was great.
It
was
so super
funny.
Fun with Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon, yeah.
That's a holiday classic.
Yeah. But I'll probably watch that around Christmas time.
As you should. As we all should.
Yes. It was just, yeah, I just liked Infinity War better. Mostly because of just the movie theater experience.
Like, oh, the movie theater experience was
we would
cool.
All like, we all would gasp, but then at the very end, everybody would be dead silent, just walking out of the theaters, just like,
yeah,
tears, grown men,
in tears,
tears water going down their face.
Did you and I see it at the same time?
I think we did. We watched it because we had the day off school.
Yeah,
because we raised enough money.
It was my senior year, yeah. And it was opening night of my final musical there. High School Musical,
yeah.
On stage.
Yeah.
And we had the day off. Maybe it wasn't opening night. It might have been the second day, that Friday. But we had the day off of school. And so, yeah, the whole cast, or a lot of the cast, went to go see it.
Yeah,
and
a lot
mom,
of the school, too.
Mom organized it, so yeah. It makes sense that you were there.
Because Dr. S was there, remember?
Yeah. Yeah, we had some faculty there. There were a lot of students and then some parents. And so we all went and watched it together before our call time that night for the show. And all of us were like, how are we supposed to act after this? And we all had to keep, not everybody in the cast went to see it, so we had to keep our mouths shut.
Yeah.
And we couldn't talk about it once we got to the theater. But every so often, somebody would walk into a room and snap, and then everyone who had seen the movie would just fall over onto the stage, and it was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that movie just, like, made cinema just, like, history, I would say. Just that movie. Like, because we've never seen anything like that, I would say.
With that freaking characters.
Yeah. But then, like, all of them to just lose.
True.
We've never seen a movie with heroes lose before, too, I feel like.
Well, I mean, that's not true. There are definitely movies where the good guys have lost. But, I don't know. When I was a kid, I remember wanting, because we would watch Saturday morning cartoons as a kid. And I remember always being, I remember getting frustrated that the heroes always won. And I was like, well, sometimes, like, the heroes don't win. And so I wanted the villains to win once and have it not be, like, part one of part two where the heroes would come back and, like, you know, win in the end. And Infinity War, even though a part two was coming, it was kind of like that. Because it was still going to be, like, a year at least before the next part came out.
Yeah, I think it was a year and a half. Because Captain Marvel came out in between that.
Oh, gosh.
As long as Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Last question.
Okay.
I'm stuck between two, but I'm going to ask one.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield is better than Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire. Three, two, one.
Disagree.
Agree.
Oh. You go first.
Okay, fine. I like his movies because I think he had a different interpretation of Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
His Spider-Man was just a lot cooler, more daring, I want to say. I'm a fan of the second one. I love the second one. I like it better than the first. TASM 2. Not only because it's just, like, really, really sad at the end, but, like, I mean, he just had to fight. It just showed his character about how, like, he cared so much about the people that he literally fought Electro and, like, Green Goblin and Rhino. Well, that was at the end, but still. I just think I liked it a lot more, and I like his Peter Parker and Spider-Man more than Tobey Maguire. Even though Tobey Maguire is, like, original, and Tom Holland is, like, the new face, young face of Spider-Man, I just like him a lot more. And when he showed up in No Way Home, I was more happy to see him than Tobey Maguire, I'm going to be honest. Oh. Yeah.
Interesting take.
Yeah. That's sorry.
Fair. No need to apologize. That's fair.
Okay, why do you disagree?
I think that the TASM movies just weren't fully developed. They tried to set up the Sinister Six. They tried to set up a lot of things. and then just couldn't pay any of it off. And so it just felt a little bit stretched and rushed, I think. I also watched Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man first, and it probably wasn't until I was older, but I remember our mom saying that Tobey Maguire's, the first Spider-Man movie came out the year after 9/11.
That's right.
And so having an American hero really united the people of this country to have like a character to hope in mm-hmm. on the big screen. And I mean, I was alive during 9/11. I don't remember anything because I was only not even one and a half. But knowing that Tobey's Spider-Man, for all of the movie's faults, was able to bring people hope in a really hopeless time, mm-hmm. I think just has really stuck with me. And then Tom Holland is just such a fun actor, fun person, and he has really great chemistry with Jason and Zendaya in the movies, and with Robert Downey Jr. as well.
Yep.
And he's just such a fun person. Also, he's just, you know, a walking disaster.
He is.
And I feel like that kind of encapsulates the high school spirit of like nerdy little Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Where he, yeah, was a walking disaster and wasn't supposed to be cool.
Yeah. True. Yeah. I think, yeah, because the final scene in the first Spider-Man, like Tobey Maguire, when he like swings to the American flag and poses there. Yeah. I remember mom saying just how like the whole theater just like stood up and cheered.
Yeah.
And I was like, that would be really cool to be there when to see that happen. But for sure. Yeah. Cool. Maybe we'll do that again sometime with other guests. That'd be fun. I got it from a comic book movie nerdy podcast.
Nice.
They just do agree disagrees and they do their top tens, and they always end up fighting one another and getting really heated. Like one guy hates the Last Jedi scene with Rey and Kylo when they fight the Red Guards like in front of dead Snoke.
Oh.
And how like the choreography is just like really bad, because like one frame like the guards have no weapons, but then the other frame all of them have weapons at the same time.
Yes.
And you're like, how the heck did this happen? But then the other guy like loves the scene. He thinks Last Jedi is like a really, really good Star Wars movie. So they have like really very different takes.
Very polarizing.
Yeah, and there's just a clip when he just gets really heated, and it's like really funny. But you're like, dude, is their friendship over? Like, it was an intense conversation.
I'm sure.
But yeah, so now that we're done with that, we're going to talk about a little bit of Christianity. Talk more about that a little bit, and then talk about the arts, because you did shows that you mentioned.
I did.
And then at the end, we're going to talk about some movies that have some Christian themes and elements in them.
Cool beans.
Yeah, so Christianity
is good,
yes.
See you all next week.
Yeah, next episode.
Okay, bye.
When did you become a Christian?
Oh. It's really hard to pinpoint that for certain. One of my neighbors just came home, I guess. Because like you, I mean, we're siblings, so we were both raised in a Christian home. We were both raised in the church. We both went to a Christian school. And so it's hard to think of a time when I didn't know the gospel. It's hard to think of when I really made it my own. I do know that whether I was genuinely saved or not, when I was in like early middle school, I went through a really tough period of time where I had a lot of anxiety about my faith and about salvation and about not doubts per se about God, but doubts that like I was saved. and I don't know if that was the enemy or if that was the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
But there were like some extenuating circumstances that really caused that to amplify, and it was just a really difficult time in my life. But I have come past that and come out of it, and again, whether I was already saved or not, I know that I'm saved now, and I don't have those doubts about my salvation anymore. I think that the school that we attended when I was there, they really emphasized the importance of making your faith your own. They were under the impression that, I mean, they were under the accurate assumption that everyone there came from a Christian family, so they really tried to emphasize the importance of the fact that our parents' faith isn't going to save us.
Yes.
And it's a faith that we have to make our own, and we have to choose whether or not we're going to believe it. And so I really appreciated that emphasis and appreciated the weight that they put on that, because it is really important for kids to know that just because your parents go to church and just because you go to church doesn't mean that you're actually a believer.
Yep.
So I really appreciated that. And then the church that I remember better, our home church, we started there when I was 7. And so I really consider that the church that I grew up in. The Sunday school teachers, I felt like, did a good job of presenting the gospel. And when I got old enough to appreciate sitting through the actual sermons, there was great preaching coming from the pulpit from our lead pastor for the last few years. And then the youth group also really helped me work on my faith. And then when I was 17, I was baptized by our youth pastor at the time.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's cool. Good. Good testimony. Good job, Megan. She
Thanks,
gave me
Mike.
A fist bump and I gave her a high five.
Yes, indeed.
It's called a turkey. Turkey. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. What would be your favorite book of the Bible?
Ooh.
Old Testament and then New Testament. So you can have two.
Okay.
Yep.
Song of Solomon. I'm just kidding.
Wah wah.
Oh, of the Old Testament. Oh, this is hard. I didn't have these questions ahead of time, so I wasn't able to prepare.
Did it on purpose.
Yeah. You're just going to be left with some filler space while I think about the answer to that question.
That's fine.
I really like, I know all 66 books, and my brain has just gone blank. This is why I can't be put on the spot.
First Maccabees, second Maccabees.
Gospel of Thomas,
Gospel of Thomas, Peter. Gospel of Peter.
Third Revelation.
Gospel of Judas. I'm just kidding. I don't know if that's even a real one.
The script for Jesus Christ Superstar is also one of the books of the Bible.
Yep, that's the bonus feature.
Bonus feature.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is going to be really cliche, but I mean, I really love the Book of Psalms, just because I've come to understand that there's a lot more to the Psalms than just being like, oh, like, praise the Lord for all the good he's done in my life, or like, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. That's super, like, la-di-da. Like, yep. There's a lot of emotion in the Psalms, and learning about the context that the Psalms were written in is also really cool. And so I just feel like there's such a level of just emotion in that book that it's really helpful for me to refer to, because there's a lot of, there are a lot of like praise songs, but there are also a lot of laments and a lot of reflections, a lot of reminders. Yeah, so I really appreciate the Book of Psalms overall. And my favorite book of the New Testament, also hard. I also feel like I have all of this new knowledge and information about how to read the books of the Bible from that Simeon Trust workshop, that I'm like, I want to go read all the books of the Bible again so that I can make sure that I'm accurately appreciating them all. But I really enjoy, it's hard. Because I mean, they're all so special. I mean, I really love the Gospel of John. I think it's a really great one.
That's a book that like a lot of pastors recommend to like new believers. They just became a Christian and they don't know where to start. Read the Gospel of John. That's a good description of Jesus, what he did, his crucifixion, and then his resurrection.
Resurrection.
Yeah. I mean, all four of them are good, but I think John just like, I think, says more, I feel like.
He does, he is a bit long-winded. I think one of my favorite verses from John is at the very end of the book when he says there are many more things that Jesus did on earth, and if I were to write all of them down, the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. And that's just such a beautiful picture because it tells me just that Jesus did so much more than was put in the Gospels that we don't know about until we'll get to heaven. And we
That's
can
so
say,
cool.
like, okay, like, what else did you do while you were here, Lord?
Yes, I beat a kid up because they destroyed my sandcastle. Gospel of
Okay.
Thomas for the people that don't know what that is.
Okay. That's heresy.
Just
I'm going
kidding,
to have
that's not
to
true, that's
bring you
false.
before the elders.
He did not do that because he was perfect. He did
Yes,
not
he
beat up
was
kids.
sinless. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Podcast will have to be put on hold because Stephen is being brought before the elders for claims of heresy and blasphemy against the
Great.
Lord.
Here they come. Shoot.
FBI, open up.
I think my favorite Old Testament would be Ecclesiastes, because when we did that deep dive of that, also just side thing, expository preaching, I'm just gonna say it, is so much better than topical preaching.
Oh, for sure.
For the people that go to church that do topical preaching, that's fine. That if that's the way your pastor does it, that's fine. As long as he is connecting it back to the gospel and Jesus Christ
And preaching an accurate
and
gospel.
preaching an accurate gospel, yes, then that's fine. Our church does expository where each series is a different book of the Bible and they go through it chapter by chapter, verse by verse. Well, Numbers is four chapters by four chapters, I guess. But that's just because it's a long book. But expository preaching, just for me and a lot of people there, you just get more stuff out of it. You learn more about the author, why they're writing it, just the great things God's done, that Jesus has done, and how it ultimately just connects back to Christ, basically.
Yeah, it starts out as more just educational. Like, oh, we're gonna talk about why this was important for the original audience. But then when you realize how every passage of the Bible connects to Jesus and what he did and who he is, it's just such a beautiful picture and a beautiful connection to make. And it's so cool to read the Bible and see that everywhere you are. Like, our study in Numbers has been so helpful because Numbers is, I mean, a lot of people struggle with the Pentateuch and reading through it straight through. And I am definitely that way. Like, no judgment to anybody who's started Numbers and then given up because I've done that before.
Me
My
too.
Bible reading plans usually peter out by halfway through the Pentateuch. I'm like, all right, Genesis and Exodus, we've got some good stories, and then oh, Leviticus and Numbers, like, this is kind of weird, and we're just taking censuses of Israel, and I don't really care, like, they're not alive anymore.
There's five laws that sound the exact same
Yeah,
thing.
like, but realizing that the law was given for Israel's protection and to foreshadow Christ is just so, it just shines a whole new light on the whole book of Numbers and the whole Old Testament in general.
So true.
Because I've been familiar with like the Old Covenant, New Covenant peoples, the Old Covenant people of Israel, and the New Covenant body of believers, the church, and how, you know, Christ fulfilled the Old Covenant. And so now we're under the New Covenant, and then he'll come again. But it has been so cool to really slow down and go back and learn all that that Old Covenant entailed. And how even if they followed all of those rules, they still could not be in God's presence because of their sin. And if it ended there, I mean, that's just so hopeless. These people wanted to be with God. God wanted to be with his people. And yet because of their sin, they couldn't be in God's presence without facing his just judgment. And yet he sent his own son, Christ, to be that perfect sacrificial lamb, to be spotless, to fully fulfill the law that no human being ever could on their own, and then take on all of the punishment for all the sin in the whole world that every single person has ever committed, to be separated from God, be separated from himself, his Father, and then to rise from the dead.
Yeah.
And be perfect still and blameless. And then because he's taken on our sin, we can be in God's presence now.
Yep.
And that's just such a beautiful truth. And it's so encouraging to see that reflected through God's provision of the Old Testament law, knowing all the while that someone better was always coming.
For sure. Yeah. And we didn't live through that 500 years of silence.
400.
Is it 400?
Yeah.
Okay. 400 years of silence, like the Israelites and those people did. But like, I bet, like, when they were living during those, when, it just sounded like Southern right there.
Those years of silence.
During those years of silence, I mean, I bet it would be really hard to just, you know, believe that everything that, like, the book of Isaiah said and all the other prophecies. I think, I mean, you have Daniel, second half of Daniel talks about all that, all the dreams and stuff that he has in the visions. But I mean, you know, I bet it was really hard for them to just trust that and believe, but then, you know,
it would have been so discouraging.
Yeah. But then, you know, you have an angel appear in front of Mary, and then Joseph has a dream with an angel, and then, you know, slowly but surely, and it doesn't happen right away because there are still some people like the Pharisees and other people that still didn't believe. But slowly but surely, Jesus rose up, did miracles, preached the gospel, died, rose again 3 days later, and then ascended into heaven and left us with the Holy Spirit and other believers to spread the word of God.
Yeah.
And to be his hands and feet.
Yes.
Yay.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Cool.
Go team Jesus.
Go team Jesus. Guys, you don't have to pay to be beyond team Jesus, just letting you know.
Oh my gosh.
No money.
No money, but as he says in scripture, there are sacrifices.
True. Pick up your cross.
Yeah, which is a verse that's kind of taken out of context as well.
It is, yeah.
It's just about acknowledging that you have to carry the cross before you can get the crown.
Very true.
Which sounds really cliche, but it's true. And a lot of people don't realize that. Jesus promises the exact opposite of a trouble-free life for his believers.
Yeah.
But like we talked about this morning in church, we have contentment in Christ. We don't have contentment in our circumstances.
Yes. True. Yep. Okay, cool. Now to the arts topic. So you said how you were in High School Musical on stage, but you did other shows than just that.
I did.
Throughout your middle school and high school times. Well, you did. Did you do middle school shows? Did they even have that?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
I couldn't do any of the middle school plays, but I did the musicals when I was in middle school.
Okay.
Like the spring musicals were open to middle school. I couldn't do any of the middle school plays, though.
Okay.
There was like 1 year where we were on vacation, and then another year where there's some other reason why I couldn't audition.
So you did, because I know during high school, like the fall would be a play and then the spring would be a musical.
Mm-hmm.
So did you do in high school fall and spring as well? Or did you just do spring?
No, I did the plays too. Okay. Freshman year, I think, was the last year I couldn't do a play.
Okay.
I think we were on vacation over the show dates. And then I heard that the play didn't go very well. So
what was it?
Probably for the best that I wasn't there. It was Little Women, and I mean, it's a great story, but it's very long, and there wasn't some very good, I don't know, it seems like the blocking wasn't even finished by the time the show opened, and it was just a bit of a disaster.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know because I wasn't a part of it.
Yeah.
But, I did the musicals 7th through 12th grade, and then the plays I did 10th through 12th. And then I also did stage crew in some middle school shows.
Mm-hmm. What was the favorite role you got? I think I know the answer, but
oh,
I just don't know what the name is. I know the show.
Okay.
But
My favorite musical role was Hava in Fiddler on the
I knew
Roof.
it. Don't bite my necklace.
That
Ooh.
he's not talking to me. He's talking to Elric, my
Yeah,
cat.
sorry, sorry.
I, Megan Williams, am not trying to bite my brother's necklace,
Probably not.
Thomas. My cat is. He likes to munch. Yeah, I was Hava in Fiddler on the Roof when I was a sophomore in high school. Hava is Tevye's third daughter. And so the three oldest, he's got five daughters, and the three oldest daughters are like the main-ish, like the main daughters. The two younger ones are too young to really experience much in the story. So I was the third daughter out of the five, and that was a super fun role for me. It was the biggest role I received in a show in high school, so I just really loved getting to stretch the boundaries of my character and getting to stretch the boundaries of like being in a lot more scenes, not just as an ensemble member. And then my favorite role, which I did come to appreciate the value of being in the ensemble because I was in the ensemble a lot as well, and it was really fun to try to come up with like different character backstories and from, my little ensemble character that only I knew, but it was still fun. And then it was fun to be in more of the bigger numbers, but it's also fun to have a specific role and to be able to bring a specific character to life. My favorite role that I received in plays, is a little harder. I really enjoyed being, what was my name? Madame Gaspard, I think, in A Tale of Two Cities. I was two roles in A Tale of Two Cities. That was my junior year play. I was the. Are you familiar with A Tale of Two Cities?
No, I was too young to go any of those because I just would get bored.
That's true. It was
That's
a
why
long
mom
show,
and dad
but it
never
was really
took me.
fun. The book is by who wrote the book?
Charles Dickens.
Oh, good job. Proud of
I
you.
know that.
Okay, good.
They made it a musical too.
Can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I watched the movie in history class a couple years before we did the show. Our director wanted us to read the book, and then I did not read the book. But I have a copy of it, and I want to read it
She
sometime.
did the Spark Notes.
No,
I'm just
I
kidding.
didn't do that either. I just figured it out.
That was my book. My book was Spark Notes.
But I was, so there's a woman at the beginning of the show whose son is killed by like one of the rulers in France. And I was the mother of the son that died. And the body that we used was a giant Elmo stuffed animal that was wrapped in a bunch of sheets because the sheets were white and Elmo's red. So we had to wrap it in a bunch of sheets. And it was just this like squishy, like this bundle.
Yeah.
And so my quote unquote son was killed. And I had to give this like horrible scream on stage, like the scream of a mother who's just lost her child, which, as someone who doesn't have kids, isn't something I've ever experienced. So the director really worked with me on that. And I had a lot of fun because usually, even in shows, you're mic'd, so you don't need to be like as loud as you can. But for the scream, she was like, no, like be like don't hold back. So it was kind of fun to like let loose all of that emotion. And then it was also a fun role because that same character, that woman, later sneaks into the house of the man who killed her son and stabs him. So
You hit killed someone?
I, not in real life, I obviously. Why do you say, oh, like you thought I actually killed somebody? No, it was my good friend played the role of the guy that I ended up killing. So it was fun to do that scene with him because obviously I don't want him dead.
Or does she?
I definitely
Just kidding, I'm kidding, I'm
don't
kidding.
listen to anything he
Kidding,
says.
kidding.
But I got to use a prop knife and the spot was marked where it looked like I was stabbing him in the chest. Obviously I didn't. He was fine. Although there was one rehearsal where we were all like really tired, really slap happy, It was coming up close to opening night, and we were all just kind of at our wits' end. And so we were running through that scene, and I definitely missed the mark and definitely stabbed my friend with the prop knife. It really hurt him.
Oh,
I
wait,
mean, he
so
was
it
fine
wasn't.
enough to, perform. I didn't actually hurt him, but it just, I don't know. It's plastic, so it was just like being poked.
Have you seen the prop knives where, like, the blade goes in?
Yeah, that's what it
It
was.
was that?
Yeah, I think
Okay.
so.
But you just did it too hard to the
No, I
point.
actually hit him. So I wasn't
Oh,
supposed to hit
okay.
him. There was like a tape mark behind his body because he was laying down. He was asleep. The character was.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so he was laying down asleep. I snuck into the house and then was supposed to stab like a mark behind him, and he would
Okay.
react, like arch his back or whatnot. But I accidentally hit him instead of the mark. And so the director was like, oh, we're gonna take a break.
Megan actually wants to murder. I'm just
I
kidding.
do not.
Just
Once
kidding.
again,
I'm
don't
kidding.
listen to what he says. But the one of the funniest parts about that scene was that we blocked it, we rehearsed it that way, and then on opening night, before call time, I think it was after school, or maybe we had just gotten there, the director comes up to me with the principal at the time, and she's like, hey, we need you and my friend to go through the scene. We need to get it approved by the school before we can like actually perform it. I was like, it's opening night. Like,
Bruh.
what are we gonna do? I mean, I understand because like murdering somebody in a show at a Christian school, you definitely want to make sure that you handle that well. But it was just kind of hilarious to me that they waited until opening night. I was like, what if we have to change stuff? Like, what are we gonna do? We've already rehearsed it this way.
Did you have to
But
change it?
no, it was approved.
Oh, that's good.
And then so, we were able to proceed as normal. But I was just like, yeah, what would we have done if you had said if the school had said that we couldn't do it that way?
That's funny.
So then my character, after that first character, she was executed for, committing murder. And so then I was another character in the second act of the show. I was like the complete opposite. I was the mother of the main character, and I was only in, like one scene, but I got to wear this really fancy dress with a lot of layers, and I had to wear a wig, as I was a French aristocrat lady or
Yeah.
something. And yeah, I got to wear this giant dress, and it was really fun to be laced up in that. Although it didn't close in the back, there was like a hole or something, so I had to wear a cape so that, I wasn't flashing the audience.
That's always important.
Yes. So I got to wear this like really flowy cape and this really flowy, pretty period dress. And my friend's mom, who's a photographer, she actually captured a really great picture of me like turning and running away dramatically with like my hands over my face and my skirts flying behind me. And it was super fun.
But you weren't flashing at the audience.
No, because I had my
Because,
cape.
yes. Yeah, I've never had to flash the audience before.
Well, that you shouldn't ever have to flash the
Well,
audience.
like, I don't wear anything to the point that it could look like I was flashing the
Well, yeah,
audience.
because you're not wearing
Because
skirts and dresses.
guys don't wear dresses in shows.
Unless it's like Shakespeare or something.
Yes, unless it's in Shakespeare. Which we're learning about that in the acting class I'm in right now.
Oh, yeah.
Shakespeare. Yeah, it's like, I'm like, one moment I'm invested, and the other moment I'm just like, can we just actually do actual scripts, please?
Oh,
But
Shakespeare's pretty cool.
I had
I like
to,
Shakespeare plays.
I acted with, I had to do one scene. I think it was Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was the guy that, like, wants to find the girl that he's obsessed with, but she's in the woods with, like, another dude. And the girl that, like, the guy hates, but she's obsessed with him, is like following him into the woods. And I had to do it with not my Annie from Annie Get Your Gun, but the other one.
Quincy.
Yeah, Quincy. Yeah. She's probably listening. She listens.
Oh, shout out to Quincy.
Shout out to Quincy. But there is
Sorry
a
to name
line.
drop you.
There is a line. He goes, like, when I look upon thee, I am sick.
Nice.
And I don't know why, but that was like the greatest line ever. So.
Shakespeare has really awesome
Yeah,
insults and
it really
comebacks.
is.
It's super fun to read them.
Yeah, but when we had to like block it, she told us to be like really over dramatic.
Oh, yes, of
So
course.
when I looked at her, I mean, I was like, you make me sick.
Nice.
And I was like, I feel really good when I said that.
Okay, Steven actually hates her.
So. No, I don't. I don't. I don't. I'm serious. I don't. But yeah, it was just, it's interesting learning Shakespeare and stuff. Because we never did that at MVC.
Like Shakespeare plays, you mean?
Yeah, well, we never like really studied it anyway.
You didn't?
No.
I did. We read a different Shakespeare play every year in English class.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you did it.
Well, we did Romeo and Juliet, but like, I mean.
I'm pretty sure you read others.
My English teacher shortened it because it's like just really long.
Yeah, I read.
Whoa. Bless you, kitty. Aww. I'm sorry, kitty.
I read Romeo and Juliet, and then I read Macbeth and Othello, Taming of the Shrew, Merchant of Venice, and Hamlet.
Okay.
In high school.
Cool. Would you ever do shows again in the future?
Yes.
Like if I was like, yo, you want to do this with me? Would you do it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I also have asked you that question.
That's true.
Yeah.
I would say yes.
I definitely want to do theater again. After graduating from school, I did audition for a local production probably the summer after I graduated, and I got in the ensemble, but I didn't do the show because I was going to audition for another show at this that was going on at the same time, but then I didn't end up auditioning for that one. So it was I just ended up not doing any shows.
Yeah.
And then I auditioned for another show like a couple years ago and was really looking forward to that because I really love the musical, and then I didn't get a role and I was a little bummed.
R.I.P.
Yeah. And I asked them like specifically what I could do to improve, and they were like, you should take voice lessons. And I was like, I am and have been for like 6 years. So it really felt like kind of generic feedback.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it genuinely wasn't showing that I'd taken voice lessons, but I don't. I hope that's not true, because others have said that I have improved since taking voice lessons. So, I mean, you know, art is objective.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own opinions.
Yep.
But so I haven't acted in anything, but I have done like props help. I was the props mistress for a couple of community theater shows.
Well, I was in
that you
right?
were in, yeah. Yes.
And Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain and Annie. No, that was super fun. I enjoyed that a lot. So I just enjoy being involved with theater in any sense, but I would really love to act again. I do miss it.
So if I do Inspiring Arts again over the summer, would you actually do it?
What show are they doing?
I don't know. Everybody's saying that it's McBride's Call, the show that
Beth wrote,
yeah.
Yeah. You know,
it's like their 5-year anniversary in the summer.
Yeah, that's a really good show.
Yeah.
Okay, our mutual friend, Gunner, he was in the original cast of McBride's Call.
No way.
Yeah.
With Inspiring Arts?
Yes.
Shoot.
He was Reuben? Question mark?
Because it's based off
Joseph.
Yeah.
Yeah. Set in the Irish potato famine.
Potato famine.
I'm pretty sure he was Reuben. He was one of the brothers.
Okay.
Yeah, Mom and I went to see it, the original performance.
Dang.
Because he was in it.
Yeah.
And Anna Cooper was as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, they recently released like the soundtrack of Horizons of Gold. Well, McBride's Call is on there as well.
On Spotify?
Yeah.
It's on Spotify?
Yeah, so it's
like the original cast?
Yeah.
That's so cool because I loved the music when we went to see it, and I looked for it on Spotify and it wasn't there, of course.
It's definitely on Apple Music. It.
Okay.
I think it's on Spotify as well. Okay. But yeah, they just released the Horizons of Gold soundtrack, and I was listening to it when I was driving.
I had a lot of friends who were in Horizons of Gold because Beth Kenev, before doing, I guess during the school year, instead of doing Inspiring Arts, she worked with the Help Homeschool program.
Yeah,
And so a lot of my friends who were homeschooled and did theater at MVCA also did theater with Help. And so they did Horizons of Gold there 2 or 3 times over the years.
Yeah, they did.
And so, yeah, I've got quite a few friends who were in at least one production of Horizons of Gold.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody like went crazy when they said that. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what that is. was like, that's really cool. But I was listening to the music and I was like, wow, it's actually really good.
Of McBride's or Horizons?
Horizons. I haven't done McBride's yet. Everybody's like, yeah, it's probably that over the summer. And I'm like, I can't do an Irish accent. I don't even know what they sound like.
Well, you can just watch Lord of the Rings a lot.
Who speaks in an Irish accent? The dwarves?
No, I'm pretty sure that... maybe not the movies, but one of either Billy or Dominic, I think, are Irish.
I think
either
it's...
either Merry or Pippin.
I think it's...
Dominic, I think.
Dom.
Dom. I think he might be Irish.
No, I think it's... I think it's...
Billy?
Billy Boyd.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I just found it on Spotify.
Yeah.
It is here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, I don't know. I don't know if it's Gunnar.
Well, it's live, so it might have been.
Okay, it might be him then. Yeah. I had no idea that he did that.
Yeah.
Shoot, so when I have voice lessons tomorrow, I'm going to ask Beth if she knows who Gunnar is. She'll probably say yes.
And she should, yeah, definitely say yes.
That's crazy. It's like everybody, like, yesterday, somebody was like, because I told them that I graduated from AVCA, and they were like, oh, do you know? And I'm like,
Yes,
I do. They go to our church. And they were like, yeah, she did Inspiring Arts. I was like, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but she was in McBride's Call.
Nice.
Either that or Jane Eyre. I don't remember.
That's right.
They sound similar.
Inspiring Arts never did Jane Eyre.
They did.
When?
I think it was a while ago.
How long is a while ago?
Like 2013 was when they did Horizons of Gold the first time.
Okay.
And then it was sometime in between there.
Well, that's not helpful. That's like 12 years.
I swear, because okay. I was in the studio and I saw the poster of it.
Okay.
I saw Jane Eyre.
I believe you. That's one of my favorite shows.
Do you want proof? When I go tomorrow, I'll take the picture of it and I'll send it to you.
That's the show that I auditioned for and didn't get into.
Oh.
It was with a different production company.
What company?
Merit.
Merit Theater?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's no shade to anybody involved in the show. That's just a fact. It is a fact also that I am bummed that I wasn't in it, but I went to see it because I knew some people in it. Oh yeah. The music is amazing.
Okay.
When did I see it? Actually, you know what? Maybe I saw it for the first time at Inspiring Arts.
Told you.
Because my friend Sam was in it. I went to see him in that because I knew I'd seen it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I doubted you. I went to see it and it actually inspired me to read the book for the first time because the music was so good. And I wanted to learn about the story. So I went home and I read the story. Plug for Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Amazing book. Really beautiful Christian themes, even in that.
Mm-hmm.
It has been made into a movie. But I've only seen like the BBC adaptation. Also a plug because the actress who plays young Jane Eyre is the actress who plays Lucy Pevensey in the Chronicles of Narnia films.
No way.
So, yeah.
Oh, shoot.
So she plays young Jane. So she's not in it a ton, but it's still fun to, see actors you recognize. But yeah, so I saw Jane Eyre at Inspiring Arts, went home, read the book, fell in love with the music, and then Merritt did it, and I auditioned for it, and then went to see the production, and it was so well done. So yeah, go check out the soundtrack on Spotify. Have you ever listened to the music?
McBride's?
No, Jane Eyre. Yeah.
No, Beth actually told me to listen to the guy that sings.
He has a really good voice.
Yeah, she said to listen to him, so I got to do that.
It is. I will listen to it with you.
Okay.
It's such great music.
Yeah, she said it's actually really good.
It is. It's one of my favorite musical adaptations because, there are too many of them, and so I don't like all of them, but Jane Eyre was a very good adaptation.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. The last part probably will not be, we might have to cut it short just because we have somewhere to be.
Maybe a little bit.
That's okay. So this is going to be finding Christian themes or elements in movies that have been made over the few years.
Yes, in movies that have been made. It would be hard to find themes in movies that don't yet exist.
Okay. I have a few. I know you have some too.
Yes.
And that you haven't told me, so I'm excited to hear. But the first one that just popped in my head that I didn't write down, but is the scene in... Now, the whole movie doesn't have it a Christian theme or anything,
mm-hmm.
but like I think feel like this one scene really just like symbolizes Christianity. But it's the scene in Half-Blood Prince, Harry Potter, when somebody very important passes away, and the dark mark of Lord Voldemort is hovering over Hogwarts. And they all the wizards and witches raise their wands at the same time, and a light comes out of them, and all of their lights are shining, and all of a sudden it like breaks the snake in the mark that's above it.
That's cool.
And all, and it shows how the light like pierces the darkness, and it like destroys the snake cloud mark thing that's in there. And that part's really cool, but like also the music that's played over it as well. I mean, like,
shout out to John Williams, not our brother. Well, but
he
the composer.
Okay, he didn't compose that movie. Fun fact: he only did the first three.
Oh, he only did the first three.
Yeah.
Okay. Who did the others?
I forget what his name was that did the sixth one, but it actually got, it was nominated for an Oscar of Best Soundtrack, but or score, score. But yeah, I think that scene really has some
cool,
a big Christian element in it for sure.
There's a big, there's a big motif about light versus darkness in the whole Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
Just with Harry wrestling with the parts of Voldemort that were transferred to him with the backfiring killing curse and wrestling with like his darker impulses and his own sin, and how just how so many characters in the franchise aren't just pure good or pure bad. There are definitely some that are pure good and pure bad.
Yeah.
But there are a lot that are pretty murky gray. And so there's a lot of talking or a lot of emphasis and repeated themes of your choices defining you and your actions defining you versus like who people say you are and choosing to do the right thing. So that's a pretty common motif throughout the whole franchise. And as I've been rereading the books, I realized that I think it was, I think there was maybe one in Half-Blood Prince, and then there was one in Deathly Hallows as well. Maybe a couple. But when Harry and Hermione are in the cemetery in Godric's Hollow, there are a couple of scripture verses on different headstones that are like printed in the book. And I mean, it's not uncommon for even non-believers to have like Christian sayings on their tombstones. But I mean, since Rowling wrote the books herself, she didn't have to include that. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's true.
There's one, the last enemy to be destroyed is death, which I think is from Corinthians. And then there are a couple of others, and I can't remember what they are now, but it was just a really interesting interesting motif to pick up on. And it's interesting to see how when you create a world like that, I mean, you have to take into account religion, because whether people believe it or not, like everybody has a religion and everyone worships something. Everyone has a god of some kind, whether it's the living god or yourself. I mean, it doesn't matter. Everyone, well, it does, but you know what I mean? Everyone has a god, whether they think so or not. And so because of that, you have to create or think about religion when you're world building. So it's just interesting to see how different themes of Christianity are taken and sometimes treated well and sometimes like twisted slightly or altered just in different popular media.
I think the whole, the sixth one movie, I mean, the whole, I think, like, the color in that movie, like, it changes color, like, every single scene. There's always a different filter that they use for it.
Like I said before, I haven't seen the movies in a really long time. I will take your word for it.
Yeah, because I just remember, like, they really just emphasized on the color usage of that movie, which is very unique, but, like, watching it back, because I watched it a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and I noticed the color, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting how they did that. And it kind of works, just because, like, the entire movie, like, you know, like, just, you feel like something bad is going to happen.
Yeah. The sixth book is very, like, green is a very common color throughout the book.
Okay, what movie do you have that?
Well, in high school, I wrote a paper about The Dark Knight Rises and the Christian themes in The Dark Knight Rises. It was for my worldview class, best class I ever took. Shout out to Russ Thiessens, the best.
Russ.
And we had to pick a popular movie and write about a dissenting worldview, so a worldview other than Christianity that was present in the film.
Yeah.
And then also make like any Christian tie-ins that we did notice.
Yep.
So he'd given us a list. The Village by M. Night Shyamalan
yes,
was in that.
Yes.
I ended up watching that movie anyways. It was good. It's a good movie. Oh, heavy, but good.
Yeah.
And I don't remember all the movies on there, but we also were able to suggest different movies. And I had recently rewatched Dark Knight Rises and was already kind of putting pieces together. So I asked him if I could do that movie, even though it wasn't on the list. And he said yes. So I wrote about the Marxist themes in Dark Knight Rises, mm-hmm. just with Bane's whole shtick being, we're giving everything back to the people and we're overthrowing the rich and
nobody cared who I was till I put on the mask.
Well, yeah, that's not Marxist, no, but that is what he says.
What a lovely, lovely voice.
But his whole thing is making the people rise up and take power for themselves, yeah. out of the hands of the government, out of the hands of the rich, and turning it into this dystopian island, like totally cut off from the rest of the world, which is very socialist and, yeah. Marxist, with nothing belonging to, everything belongs to everyone and nobody actually owns anything, yep. and there's no private ownership. Everything is spread equally around. And so I wrote about that. And then I also did write about the Christian elements that were in that film.
Okay.
There are a few. So specifically when Bruce is in the pit, the prison, it takes him 3 tries to, yep. climb out. 3 is obviously a biblical number, and
yes.
Jesus was dead for 3 days before he rose again. So Bruce rose, quote unquote, from the pit on his 3rd try. As he is climbing out of the pit, the prisoners are chanting, "Rise."
Yes.
And then.
Thanks.
No problem. I'm trying to keep his computer from turning off. And then there was even some similarities with the way Alfred abandoned Bruce,
yep.
between how Alfred abandoned Bruce and Peter's denial of Jesus, because, you know, Peter and Alfred both supported Jesus and Bruce respectively, and then,
yep.
turned their backs at the end, kind of thing, and then repented, if you will. And then there was another one, I think, that I can't remember now, because I wrote this paper like 8 years ago. But I used Plugged In's review of Dark Knight Rises, yep. to help a lot with my paper. And yeah, so I really enjoy dissecting films and dissecting worldviews and gleaning the different subliminal messages that are in movies.
Yeah, that's cool. I have one last one, and then we'll end it. I don't remember.
He doesn't remember. He's checking his notes.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Hmm. Haven't seen the movie.
Okay. Well, you saw me in it, the show, right?
I saw Act 1 of the show.
That's right. Yes, for the movie and the show.
But I do know, I think, enough about,
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, like, guy, George Bailey, has a family. Super just consumed on just, like, providing and stuff. And then he loses a ton of money. And just becomes super depressed, and he wants to end his life. And then an angel from God shows him, like, what his life would look like if he wasn't in it. Mm-hmm. And it shows just everybody is miserable. Like, the people that he cared about the most are just lost, and they don't even know who he was, so their life was just changed. And to me, that really just shows how much of an impact we mean on people, especially us as Christians, how being Christ's example can really change the way people view just religion, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now in our time when, like, just LGBTQ and everything like that, just how a lot of people are really lost, and, yeah. What? sorry, and just how we need to just act like we are Christians,
yeah,
rather than just, you know, acting like we're one on a Christian on Sunday, but then
mm-hmm.
6 days, the rest of the week, we're just like normal people going to parties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Christ calls us to be different, and we are different. And we need to actually like live that out and just impact mm-hmm. people in a positive way.
Yeah.
And, just be a light to the people in the darkness. And, George Bailey sees that, how mm-hmm. without him, a lot of people's lives were just really dark and ruined, because he wasn't there to, give them hope and yeah. positivity. And then at the end, he realizes that he doesn't want to die, and that he wants to, help people and to continue spreading, love and hope and just positivity to the people around him.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends happy. But yeah, yes. we just need to, be the light.
Well, I think it also ties into the passage from Philippians we talked about this morning about contentment.
Yes.
Because George just wasn't content
yeah,
in his life.
Wanted,
he always wanted more.
Yes, he does.
He was always striving for more. And yeah. if I could just have a little bit more XYZ, then I'll be happy and I'll
yeah.
be content. And
yeah.
then he lost everything and was definitely not content.
Yeah.
Almost committed suicide. But I think that, yeah, the passage in Philippians we talked about this morning just really spoke on how the secret to contentment and being content is being content in Christ and
mm-hmm.
not even trying to be content on circumstances, because
yeah.
it's just such an unreliable source and unreliable
yeah.
foundation, the sinking sand, if you will.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, our pastor opened the sermon basically by saying, like, what would it take to make you happy?
Yeah.
Which is a really probing question. And then he, towards the end of the sermon, just really, he went through the common things that people feel like they need to be happy and explained how Christ fulfills all of that and how, yeah, we truly do not need anything if we are in Christ. He is all we will ever need.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not familiar enough with It's a Wonderful Life to know if they specifically come out and say that, but it kind of seems like George gets there in the end, or even you could take it a step further and say, yes, George realized that people needed him to be happy, but they didn't need George. They needed Jesus to be happy
yeah.
and to be content. And even if George had never existed, I think the next step further would be to say, if those people in his life had found Christ,
mm-hmm.
then they could have also truly said, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Nice.
Thanks. Not to be corny. But
putting the title in the sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we can say that.
Yeah.
Even if we are physically alone
yes.
or hurting or depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we have Christ, we truly have all we'll ever need.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Sweet. Well, there you go. That is the end of the episode with my sister, Megan.
Why are you emphasizing things weird?
Sorry. I guess I'll stop.
Oh, awkward. Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I wanted to make it awkward. Okay.
Don't guys, make me sign off. I don't know how you sign these off.
Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Jesus and the Arts. I will, Lord willing, find a guest for next week. If not, it might be you a second time.
That's fine.
I'm just
Have
kidding.
Me on again.
I don't know.
Maybe not 2 weeks in a row, but
yeah.
I'd love to hop on from time to time.
For sure. Yeah, but thank you guys so much for listening. I hope that something that we said stood out to you during this conversation, and I hope you guys have a good rest of your week. All right.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Adios.